Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Ooh, doggy. Another Friday American. Here on Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, along with my just cool, Mike. Afternoon, Mikey.
Hello, Anne. Great to be here for another exciting edition of Southern Sense. You know, those introductions are starting to get worse and worse each time now. Used to be. I almost felt like, how they always, the last person is in a deal, TV shows and also starring and they have a big name. Used to always. Now it's just like, yeah, Mike's here.
Oh, well, that's what you get for sending Andrea and Elizabeth roses yesterday and not me.
You know, I always send you too much stuff. What are you eavesdropping in my game for? Lord have mercy.
Because you mentioned me.
Yeah.
And it ended
well,
up
went,
on my Facebook page.
Well, yesterday, basically, I believe, after 2 p.m., virtually all BTR shows were wiped out due to, I'm not sure what the whole problem is, but those who tried to have shows, as we did with Conservative Primetime, we got blasted off like 10 or 15 minutes into the show, and none of us could call back. So
yeah, I saw that Andrea Shea King, her show was postponed because she couldn't even get on. I saw that with a lot of people, and when I went on to Blog Talk Radio, trying to get into some of these things, because I do occasionally pop in, you know, I do listen to other people's show, and I had a problem even just getting into BTR. I would get in, and then when I went to pull up a page, I get a blank page. So I hope they've got it fixed and that we don't get kicked off.
Yeah, let's hope we don't. It's never a good thing. So, but it is great to be here on this 19th of April, how the time flies when we're having fun.
Yeah, tax day is coming past. So we're going to be spending the next 4 months paying for those taxes. We got an exciting show today. We've got Tom Trento, who has his own radio show out of Florida, and you can find it on Trento TV, TrentoVision.tv. Let me get that correct. And believe it or not, Tuesday we've got Robin Walensky. She'll be our guest here on BTR. She is a reporter. She wrote the book about the Casey Anthony case called Beautiful Life. She came to prominence with her reporting from 9/11 and with her reporting exclusively on the Casey Anthony case. And she is the reporter for Glenn Beck TV. So we're going to have Robin on next Tuesday. But today is Tom Trento.
Going to be cool. And as always, remember, you can talk to us, you can join us, Facebook, Twitter, everywhere.
Yeah, we're on Facebook, we're up on Twitter, MySpace, Stitcher, Spreaker, iTunes. I believe we're also up on SoundCloud, I believe. Yeah, we're all over the place. And you can also find us.
Frog?
Oh, I forgot about that one. Something Frog, yeah. You can find us also by going to our exclusively new website, southernsense.webs, WEBS.com, or go to rebelmouse.com/southern_sense. All right, each show that people listen to know that we dedicate it to a fallen hero, and today we're going to do a little modification because we're going to dedicate it to now two fallen heroes. One who recently passed away this past Wednesday. But the first dedication will go out to, let me get this everything together here, just bear with me, Army Rangers Staff Sergeant Ryan F. Coyer, who was killed March 11th, 2002. He suffered from injuries in Afghanistan and was being treated at Hunter Airfield in Savannah, Georgia, when he suffered cardiac arrest from those injuries. Ryan F. Conyer of the 1st Battalion, 75th Ranger Division, graduated from Arthur Hill High School in 2004. Ryan Coyer was only 26 and was born in Nashville, Tennessee. His parents moved to Saginaw, Michigan when he was just a child. A wood-burned decorative sign hung near the front door of Ryan Conyer's childish home in North Carolina in Saginaw Thursday. The Conyers said, the Conyers, Tony, Mary, Ryan, and Leslie. A row of miniature American flags lined the walkway leading to the front door, where on each side sat flags. One the U.S. flag, and the other the black U.S. Army flag. His parents, Arthur and Mary Conyer, wore black Ranger T-shirts bearing the name of their son's battalion and division. Before he graduated, he signed himself up for the U.S. Army. He did it on his own, and he came home one day and told his mom and dad what he was going to do. Pride is in the emotion of his father when he felt learning about his son's decision. After training in Fort Benning, Georgia, Ryan Conyer completed 4 deployments in Afghanistan and 2 in Iraq. The U.S. Army Rangers are an elite special operations unit, and what Ryan Conyer did in combat upon returning to his base stateside, he did not share. Mom and Dad have no idea what that young man did, his father said. We just know that he served, protect, and defend the country, and he did a damn good job of it. Ryan Conyer had several tattoos. The Punisher, a fictional vigilante created by Marvel Comics, with his right arm, and a sleeve of tattoos stretched from his left shoulder to his wrist. Inside the sleeve numbers were commemorated in footplate bids, designated by longitude and latitude, and symbolic reminders of his friends lost in combat. Mary Conyer said she cried for about a week after the first one, but they grew on her. Always a strong kid, Ryan Conyer played football and spent up to 7 days a week at Saginaw YMCA with his weight. He also attended Saginaw Arts and Science Academy. He was smart, his father said, and frequently earned a spot on the honor roll with a grade point average exceeding 3.5. The kid could do anything. Ryan Cornish being on today and is dedicated to him. If you look at our whole show page, you will see a picture of a lying in front of the window of Ryan Cornish. That is Mr. Leslie. It's our first anniversary of his death. Dedicated to him. To make him wear the uniform to fight for our honor. And now, I want to do a special dedication to a friend of mine who passed away. His name was Carly Morello. And this is from part of the New York Times article written about Charlie just last year. Charlie Morello still carried his gun and badge, and still wears a detective's sharp suit and tassel loafers. He still kept his dress blue uniform hanging in his closet at home. He still showed up for work for a daily tour of duty at the 90th Precinct in New York City, in Williamsburg section of Brooklyn, the neighborhood where he spent his entire police career. But here's the twist. He was 92. And nearly 30 years retired. It was in 1951 he joined the New York City Police Department. Those 20 years and out of opportunity may appeal to some, but not to Charlie, who may be the closest thing to a non-agenarian New York police detective. Charlie said for this article for the New York Times last year, "After I retired, I just kept coming back. I didn't want to stop. I came every day to see what the troops need. It kept me active and feeling good." Charlie was the patriarch. He was the dispensing advice. He was the union's amenity and information man to go to. He counseled new officers. He helped with the clerical work, and he notarized personal documents for anyone who needed it. Each morning he reported to the community affairs office, a small little box-sized room just in front of the station, just by the front door, and there he could stand sentry and greet the officers, all he knew by name. Charlie passed away this past Wednesday, and up to just a few weeks ago, at the age of 93, he still showed up at the precinct every morning. When I retired in 96, Charlie did not forget me, and every year he sent me PBA cards with my shield number on it, and when you retire, the PBA cards come stamped retired. But he made sure I got those cards every year. Not just one or two cards, but 10 of them for me to dispense to my special friends and family. Charlie, we love you and we'll be missed. We dedicate this song, My Name is America, to Todd Allen Harrington and to Detective Charlie Morello. God bless you all and may God bless America.
I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I not taken from others. Others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. For those who need me, I'll always be here. For those who will harm me, I'll face without
Southern Sense Show. Oh, Annie is going to take a moment. She's going to try and call the guest in a great tribute. I'm going to go off our structured show for about a minute and a half. As we know, our dedication to our soldier as well as Annie's friend from the NYPD. Last night, another police officer at MIT, I believe maybe he was a security guard, lost his life apparently in the shootout with who we believe are people of interest. And with that said, I want to, from NYPD's, dedicate this to Annie's friend and the guy from last night. This is from NYPD Blue, a salute to our...
Where did everybody go?
Police force.
Well, I guess they headed over to the ceremony.
Persons of interest. Obviously, one was killed. Annie, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm back. Yeah, it was a MIT police officer that was killed, but there's also a second police officer that also gave his life in the hunt for these two brothers. And believe it or not, up in Watertown, I lived the very next town over, just west in Waltham. So I know the area, and it's a quaint little area, but I left there back in 86, and as I understand, they've got a large Islamic community now up in that area of Watertown. And these were Chechens. They were Islamic Chechens.
They don't seem too well organized. If they they didn't even have an escape plan. You know, sometimes I saw, was it Mark Furman, another guy who had a good grasp on his studied Middle Eastern terror, said that sometimes for suicide bombers, their suicide is not at the site. Sometimes they know it's going to be in a shootout, or it's going to be fighting, defending somebody as a diversion. There are different routes, and he said these people are very well educated on how to do this, and very well financed. Well, these guys must have left the ATM card somewhere because they had to. Anyway, either way, I don't want to make a joke of it. In loving memory of those people, each and every day, you just. You know, we're always first to criticize the police force, myself included. I mean, every day could be the last day there.
Yeah, and it's true. And every day we would get up and we'd go off to work, not knowing whether or not we'd make it back home. And I feel bad for my husband because a lot of times he would get that phone call. Don't worry, she's okay. She's on the way to the hospital. And I felt bad for my poor husband because he had no idea what was going on. And, you know, after a while, it's like, oh, here we go again. But, these two officers gave their life in hunting down these two criminals, these terrorists. And as I understand, they were trying to trace them because, as I understand, there are reports that the two of them had attended a terrorist training camp in Pakistan. So, it's more and more is going to come out as time goes on. Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna see. You bring on our guest, I was going to mention, too.
I'm still waiting for Tom to call in.
I thought our guest was with us. But I was, I think it was Fox or CBS News, but one of them, because I'm surfing all of them, reported that the latest one to become a citizen, I don't know if it's the one who's on the run or the one who was killed, apparently became a citizen last year on September 11th.
Now, so. Talk about Islamic, what do they call it, taqiyya, where they actually lie in order to get us to accept them and eventually accept Islam. This is all the things we're going to be talking about when Tom does call in. But
another thing too, Annie, is that sometimes when they get caught, the sleepers, sometimes they're not even sleeper cells, but the minute they get caught, they're surrounded by special attorneys and whatever, and making damn sure that this guy didn't get slapped around. And I mean, you know, God bless America.
God bless the ACLU too. Oh man. Jeez, hey, it's crazy. It is really, really crazy, and I don't even know what to say half the time anymore. It's amazing. But I do have a friend of mine on hold, and I am going to bring him on. He's been trying to get on, and he's having trouble getting on to BTR. So, folks, if you're having problems with BTR, you're not the only one. This gentleman is Joe Dugan, and he's the one that formed the South Carolina Tea Party Convention. Good afternoon, Joe.
Hi, Annie. How are you today?
All right. We're waiting for Tom to call in. I'm sure he probably got tied up with something because last night we were exchanging emails and he was all hyped for it. So
yeah.
Let's hope that it's
I just
not
have a couple of I just have a couple of comments, Annie, regarding
sure.
What's happened in Boston and what's going on in this crazy country of ours. That it's been pounded into our heads, this whole nonsense about political correctness, and we can't tell the truth about anything. And therefore, the American public doesn't know what's going on in this country. And that's why we put together such a great list of speakers for our convention in January to tell the American public exactly what was going on. And there were no holes barred. Those speakers spoke from their hearts and what they had researched and gained knowledge in. And this idea that we cannot talk about radical Islam, that a terrorist attack is workplace violence, you know, is so over the top that it's just mind-boggling how the American people put up with this.
And it is. It is.
It's not only the administration; it's the Congress too. This tragedy in Benghazi, 8 months, and we can't get a bit of information about it. That would never have happened before in any time in our history.
No, it wouldn't. And Benghazi, there is a terrorist out there, and I believe he's in Pakistan right now, but they ended up taking out one of his lieutenants and bodyguard, and they wounded him. But this guy had been released from Gitmo. And once they released him, he went back to the Middle East, and they traced him directly to the attacks on Ambassador Stevens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hello, guys. You just let all these guys loose, and they're talking about letting more out of Gitmo? They're only going back into the battlefield. And hello, folks, these are not drawing lines on a battlefield. The battlefield is your backyard, your front stoop. Everywhere is now a battleground. And if you don't call these guys soldiers and treat them like prisoners of war and treat them that way, we're never going to win.
I couldn't agree with you more. This whole idea of having civilian trials for these people in Gitmo, the terrorists that planned 9/11, what a fiasco. And how does the American people put up with it?
We allow ourselves to be brainwashed, and we always look for the sunny side. And we say, yes, there are moderate Muslims. No, they're lying to you. They're lying to your face about being moderate. And we do finally have our guest calling in, so I want to welcome aboard Tom Trento. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Ann, how you doing? Good to be here with you today.
All right, and we've got Joe Dugan also with us with the South Carolina Tea Party.
Hey, Joe, he's a good friend and a wonderful patriot and activist. I'm glad we're on the show together.
Hi, Tom. Good to hear your voice.
You too, Joe. Definitely on a very strange day in America, let me tell you.
Yeah, that's what we were just discussing. And, Tom, you took part in writing this report of Team E, Sharia, the Threat to America. And I sent you a picture on your cell phone of all the notes I have on this book. I'm telling you, folks, you read this book and you will be scared.
Yeah, you definitely, you broke the record for the most amount of post-it notes on our Sharia, the Threat to America book. That's for sure. That was a great picture. I'm going to pass it around to all the team members.
Oh, no, it's going to go viral.
Yeah, right.
Tom, why don't you give us a little background on yourself, introduce yourself to the listeners.
Sure, very simple. I grew up in New Jersey, Italian guy from New Jersey. Early on in my life, I became a born-again Christian, and went from going into the FBI to going to study theology and philosophy, and did all of that, did a bunch of degrees, and became an activist in the 80s, fighting the battles of the day. For about 10 years, took some time off, and then on that fateful day in September, I watched the two buildings go down that I had watched go up as a kid. I had a background in studying Islam. I knew what it was all about, and I got back in the fight, and now I run a counterterrorism organization called The United West. We fight the Muslim Brotherhood and Islamic Jihad in the United States and other places, and I have a daily show and radio and internet TV show, Trent Television. We're here to save America, save Israel, save the West. That's my job, my work.
And people that want to find you can find you at theunitedwest.org or TrentoVision.tv. You also have a background in law enforcement, don't you?
Yeah, I was, even as a little kid, I wanted to be an enforcer of the law. So I went and did a degree in law enforcement. Then I was going to go do some more work to go into the FBI, but my life was changed. So I never went in professionally. I worked in law enforcement in other ways. But I went the academic route.
Oh, well, then I walked the footpost for you in New York City.
What's that?
I said I walked the footpost for you in New York City.
Oh, okay, matter great. I got a cousin as a sergeant there, and God bless you for doing that thin blue line. That's tremendous.
Yeah, matter of fact, when you had the South Carolina Tea Party Convention, I was listening to Mike Cutler, who we've had on the show also, and
right.
Some of the things he was talking about, my ears picked up, and I walked over to him. And we actually had been involved distantly in some of the very same cases he worked on in Brooklyn. And we had a great conversation on that. And, of course, you know, once you get Mike Cutler going, he doesn't never, ever stop.
That's for sure. In fact, I'm going to be on his show tonight at 7.
Oh, good luck. Tell him I said hi. Now, Tom... What exactly is Sharia for people that don't understand it?
Sharia is an Arabic word. It means the path. And you go, okay, the path to what? The path to righteousness with God. And the path is the law of Allah. If you want to be, and this is from an Islamic construct, if you want to be right with Allah and reach paradise, you have to go on the path, the Sharia, which means you have to follow the Sharia perfectly, and you might have a chance for paradise. It's Islamic law that governs the length of your hair, the way you wipe yourself with toilet paper, the way you ride a horse, the way you eat food, every detail you could possibly imagine.
All right, and who are the Muslim Brotherhood, and what is their involvement in Sharia then?
An easy way to understand, particularly for people from New York, to understand the Muslim Brotherhood, you may remember, and if you were in law enforcement, you certainly remember, Ann, that that fictitious organization, La Cosa Nostra, we all know it never existed, but make believe it did, okay? A criminal, an organized criminal family. The Muslim Brotherhood is Islam's answer to La Cosa Nostra. It's an organized criminal family. Criminal in the sense of Western perspective. It is the tip of the spear for Islamic jihad from a Muslim perspective.
All right, and when you look up some of the Muslim Brotherhood, you also find organizations going by the Ikhwan. What is Ikhwan?
Ikhwan is an Arabic word for brother or brotherhood. So it's Ikhwan Muslim, the brothers of Muslims, but the English transliteration is Muslim Brotherhood.
So they're one and the same then. So people, they get fooled. They get fooled by hearing Ikhwan, thinking it's not Muslim Brotherhood, but instead it's actually one and the same.
They're famous, or infamous, I should say, the Brotherhood, for using the tricks of language to deceive useful idiot Westerners.
All right. Now, your book, Sharia, the Threat to America, that you participated in, how did you get involved, and who is this Team B that put it together?
Yeah, Team B is a group of 19 national security experts, analysts, and it was spearheaded by Frank Gaffney, who runs Center for Security Policy, think tank in New York and New York and D.C. He worked for Ronald Reagan. He was the Assistant Undersecretary of Defense for Ronald Reagan. And back in the 70s, in the Ford administration, George Bush was the head of the CIA, George Bush number one, and America needed a way to figure out how to defeat the Soviets. So the administration came up with a way of approaching the Soviets where you engage the Soviets and try to negotiate and be diplomatic. That was the American policy. Well, George Bush didn't think that would work, and he and others in the CIA commissioned a team of national security experts to do an in-depth study, figure out how to defeat the Soviets. And the team, which was a top-secret team, was called Team B. And Team A, obviously, was the administration. George Bush said Team B to be a competitive analysis to the Ford administration's view of defeating the Soviets. Well, Team B compiled a document that said, we can't negotiate with these guys. They want us dead. We've got to defeat them through increased military spending, through secret operative spy missions, through all these other doctrines and dynamics. And the president who was elected in 1980, Ronald Reagan, said, you know what? I agree with Team B's analysis. And he implemented the Team B doctrine, which became known as the Reagan Doctrine. And the rest is history. He helped cause the defeat of the Soviets. Frank Gaffney, who served in the Reagan administration, saw a similar situation with the way the administration, George Bush's second term, George Bush II, and certainly Obama, were appeasing Islam. And he said, we need a Team B analysis. So he put these 19 people together. We wrote this material and said, this is the way you defeat Islam. And that's where we're at now, trying to implement the doctrines of Sharia, the threat to America.
Now, a lot of people are negotiating or having discussions with members of the Muslim Brotherhood, notably our illustrious senator here from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, going so far as to meet with them in the White House. Does the Muslim Brotherhood truly want Sharia in America? You know, would you call them the enemy now within?
Absolutely. They're absolutely 100% the enemy. They have an enemy doctrine. They have an enemy desire. And they have an enemy discipline. And, Lindsey Graham, the guy drives me crazy. Sometimes he says the greatest stuff in the world in relation to national security. Sometimes he's like, who is this guy? The Chamberlain, you know? So, yes, the Muslim Brotherhood ought to be treated as an enemy, not as a threat.
All right. Now, I noticed some references back to the Clinton White House. Was the Muslim Brotherhood involved with the Clinton White House also?
Muslim Brotherhood was started in 1928 and by a young guy, 22-year-old guy, Hassan al-Banna. They came to their own when they joined with Adolf Hitler to kill Jews. And then they helped overthrow King Farouk in Egypt. Hassan al-Banna started the Brotherhood in 1928 in Cairo, Egypt. They're an Egyptian organization. And after overthrowing King Farouk in the 50s, they thought that they would now help run the country. Well, the succeeding administrations in Egypt said, no, we don't want you. We're going to work for the West. So the Brotherhood was banned in Egypt in the 60s. So guess where they came? They came to the United States. And they settled in Champaign, Urbana, in Illinois, and they formed an organization called the Muslim Student Association. And they said, we have to win the academy. We have to win the universities in America. So 1963, they started in America. They are now on 600 campuses, and they brought with them a document that explained how they would take over America. They've been implementing it. And now they are infiltrated the White House, and they are on their path to a political takeover of the United States within the next 25 to 30 years. But Al-Qaeda, who is the same Sunni belief as the Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda wants to speed up the takeover of the West by blowing things up. What you saw in Boston this week was an Al-Qaeda-inspired operation. The Brotherhood does not want to be blowing Boston up. They got the White House. Why the hell should they be blowing anything up? So we got an interesting dynamic between the Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda, both having the same goal but different tactics and techniques.
Well, do we have a strategy against this?
No.
Well, what would your recommendations be?
Don't reinvent the wheel. We had a fabulous strategy to defeat communism in the Cold War, and about 80-85% of the tactics and procedures employed to defeat the communists in the United States in the Cold War can absolutely be applied to the Muslim Brotherhood.
All right. Now, if you're a non-Muslim and we end up under Sharia rule, what are our choices?
Well, I spent some time in Europe, and if we go to the City of Light, that is Paris, France, which you would think is the epitome of what it means to be a Westerner. There are 750 areas, good-sized neighborhoods, you know, some with thousands of homes, thousands of citizens, hundreds of homes, 750 of these neighborhoods where you, me, and Joe could not walk in and come out alive if we're identified as non-Muslims, particularly Westerners. This is what's going to happen. America may not be taken over completely by the Muslim Brotherhood, but the country will be bifurcated. The country will be cut up into balkanized pieces, and you'll have Dearborn and Muslim control. You have Muslim control in San Francisco, in Los Angeles, parts of New York. Montana will be, non-Muslim control. You'll have a de-unified United States that will not be united anymore. It'll be a mess.
Yeah, so, Tom, where are you? Because I keep on hearing all these chimes and stuff in the background.
Yeah, I'm hearing them, too. I thought it was you.
I'm sorry. That's me. If you would mute me, Annie.
Okay. I'm sorry, Joe. All right. I apologize.
I got to pay a toll here. Hang on, I got to pay a toll. And
all right.
I am driving to Orlando. I'm going to the Awakening show. You know what that is?
The Awakening?
Joe's on mute.
Yeah. What's
the Awakening? The Awakening is a Christian-oriented political conference. 3 days, today, tomorrow, and Sunday. 60 different top-notch political activists, thank you, are going to be there, including Michelle Bachmann, General Jerry Boykin, Frank Gaffney, Pamela Geller, and all the cultural issues, national security issues, Israel, immigration, will all be discussed in an effort to save America.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. You were talking about these 750 areas, but Sharia and Islam has this policy that once they move into an area and habitate there or set up something there that is just strictly for them, it becomes sacred. And that's why you have these pockets all over Paris. And I believe Britain has a couple of them. I believe Birmingham is a large area. But they actually take over, and it's their way of stomping out anyone who is a non-Muslim and spreading Islam, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely right on point. And the doctrine behind it, here's where the current administration and the second part of George Bush's, you know, 8 years, his last 4 years, here's where everyone has fallen out completely. We're so politically correct. When we look at a Muslim, we don't want to figure out what's in his head, what his beliefs are, what his goals and objectives are. We just want to say, the guy's in America, he must love football and apple pie and want to salute the flag. Well, that's not the real world. And Muslims have a higher calling than the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States of America. Their calling is by Allah, and their goal is paradise. Their focus is Muhammad. Their rule book is the Quran, and their method is jihad. So when they leave a Muslim land and they emigrate out as they're commanded to, and it's called a hijra, to go into a host nation, put your flag down, the black flag of Islam, and declare that sacred space, that isn't an option on their part. That's a religious mandated duty. Therefore, if that flag gets pushed back by the host nation, then Allah looks askance. Allah looks in a derogatory fashion on the Muslim and says, go get that land back. I gave you that land. You lost it. You want to get into paradise or you want to go to hell? Go get that land back. That's why we're having such a battle over Al-Quds, when clearly, historically, the Jews are from Israel, from Jerusalem. God gave them the land. When the Muslims went in and defeated the Jews and threw them out, now the Jews are back. The Muslims said, too bad. God gave us the land. Allah gave us the land. We got to get it back. And there will never be any peace where Muslims have planted the flag of Islam and the host nation is trying to repel Islam. There will be eternal fighting, just the way it's going to be. So there has to be security over peace. And the good thing about this is Muslims and Islam have learned that when they get the hell beat out of militarily, they view that as a condemnation against them from Allah, saying, you have not lived your life righteously. See, this whole religion of Islam is a big scam, but the doctrines and the imams and the ayatollahs teach you lost that because you have not lived righteously. Go live righteously. Follow the path, the Sharia. Then Allah will bless you again with martyrdom operations and successful jihad operations, and you'll defeat the infidel. This is 1,400 years, and not 1,400 minutes. And we don't understand this in the United States of America.
Yeah, well, fortunately, Thomas Jefferson did, and he went in so far as to buy a Quran in a bookstore in London, and he was the first one to actually wage war against the Islamic terrorists with the Barbary Wars and sending Marines into Tripoli. If anyone listens to the Marine Corps anthem, that's in their anthem.
From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, that's right. Well, if you were to go on any Ivy League campus, which have been inundated with Saudi money, and you go to a professor and say what you just said, they would say, you are an ant and an idiot. Thomas Jefferson loved Islam. He bought a Quran because of his love for Islam. And this is the narrative taught by Muslims to the leftist educators, and they bought into it. Thomas Jefferson bought a Quran to learn how to fight Islam. But they've been told by Muslim leaders that Jefferson bought it because of his love of Islam. And you can't have it both ways. But when the Saudis buy chairs at Harvard and Georgetown, $20 million donation, you're going to get the Saudi narrative being communicated in your educational system, and all of a sudden Thomas Jefferson is Muslim, you know?
Well, the question now is, everyone's talking about these moderate Muslims. Is there anyone truly called a moderate Muslim and still remain a Muslim?
No, impossible.
And why is that?
And this is the $64,000 question that even when you explain it to a person on the left, and the easiest definition of a person on the left right now is an individual who believes in the Obama policy of the government is the first place to turn to solve human problems. And tax money is the first place to turn to help solve those problems. More and more people are buying into that. And that's a socialist leftist political philosophy. When you explain the difference between moderate Muslims and moderate Islam, and you explain it to the point where they analytically understand it, they don't accept it because their decision-making process is not logical anymore. It's emotional, and their emotions simply cannot have them reject something that they're forced to believe, because otherwise they wouldn't be a good liberal and couldn't have that coexist bumper sticker on their Volvo. Well, here's how it works. Islam, so says the president of Turkey, Erdogan, Islam is Islam. He says there is no moderate Islam. We can't rewrite the book of Islam, the Quran. Who are we to tell Islam what they believe? They believe that Islam is a dictated mandate from God to rule the world, and that every Muslim, a Muslim is an adherent to Islam, has the obligation to propagate Islam as Islam. No Muslim has the right to water down Islam. So therefore, we in the West don't have the right to say, oh, the real Islam is a peaceful, loving religion, and the radical crazy have hijacked the real Islam and turned it into suicide bombers. Who the hell are we to tell Islam what their authoritative doctrines and their 1,400 years of teaching is? But we that's what our whole book was about, to say, folks, we don't have any right to tell Muslims what Islam is. We've got to understand what they believe. And if a Muslim is being true to Islam, he's a danger to the United States of America. If he rejects Islam, he could be a friend and assimilate into the United States, but he's no longer a good Muslim.
They call him an apostate?
They've apostatized. Yeah, it's apostasy. They've fallen away from the faith, and they're doomed. Now, because Islam is a religion and a political system, if you fall away from the religion of Islam, you become a traitor to the state of Islam. Therefore, traitors in any country has a doctrine of executing a traitor. So if you reject the religious beliefs of Islam, and Islam is truly a state, you are now a traitor. That's why Islam kills people who apostatize and fall away from their religion.
Now, can Islam exist under our Constitution?
No.
And why is that?
Incompatible doctrine. And Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution says there shall be no law other than American law as the supreme law of the United States. Very simple. Islam says there shall be no law other than the supreme law of Islam, the Sharia. You can't have two competing legal systems that contradict one another and coexist. It's impossible.
Now, as I understand it, that Islam does not accept man-made laws. Therefore, because our Constitution is based upon man-made laws and not the Quran, therefore our laws are illegal where theirs are legal, right?
Exactly. Put yourself in the place of now you're wearing a hijab. You haven't graduated to a burqa yet, Ann, but you've got a hijab on, your hair's covered, you're in the Sunday school classes for Islam, you're studying, and the first thing you're taught is that Allah, through the angel Gabriel, dictated the Quran verbatim to Muhammad. And the month of Ramadan, which is their month in the fall where they celebrate for a month, is a celebration of the transmission of the Quran from Allah through the angel Gabriel to Muhammad, who memorized it and other people wrote it down. Well, the Quran is the Sharia. The Sharia is contained in the Quran. It's directly dictated from Allah. Now, you go over to America and your friend takes you to a civics class. You sit in a civics class and you're taught that a bunch of old, you know, white-haired guys got together and figured out how to write law and run a country, and they wrote a constitution, and that's how we run our country. And you, Anne, as the Muslim woman, go, wait a minute. God gave us our law, and you're telling me a bunch of guys, and some of them even owned slaves, wrote your law. How stupid is that? Why should I believe your law? Our law is from God. A Muslim is not allowed to follow U.S. law. That's it.
Yeah, and that's caused a lot of...
If it contradicts. They're not allowed to follow U.S. law if it contradicts as well.
And that's actually run into some controversy with some of these activist judges actually enforcing Sharia law over U.S. law. So these U.S. judges are actually acting unconstitutionally, aren't they?
We're in a gigantic battle in Florida as we speak. Our legislature is considering a bill, American Laws for American Courts, because we've had activist judges. We've had activist judges that have done just that in Florida. They have denied typically Muslim women who are American citizens their right to the U.S. or the Florida Constitution in divorce situations or child custody cases when the Muslim man says, sorry, we were married in the Sudan, and we don't, our marriage is under Sharia. And the woman who's afraid to speak out, you know, doesn't speak up, and the judge says, okay, you know, well, we'll let the Sudanese law for divorce and child custody prevail in this case, and this American citizen Muslim woman is denied her constitutional rights. That's what we're fighting. Five states have passed a law that prohibits that to happen now, and we're hopefully going to be the sixth in another week or two.
Yeah, it passed in the House, which was House Bill 351. It's sitting in the Senate and has not come to the floor in the Florida Senate. It's Senate Bill 58. So if anyone's listening in the Florida area, contact your senators and tell them to pass Senate Bill 58. It's a great law.
Amen.
Yeah, and I keep up with it. I told you I did my homework.
All right. No, you are great, let me tell you.
All right. Now, people are thinking that, you know, Sharia, why are we getting all freaky about it? But we've got the conflict in Syria, and now the Syrian rebels, we're hearing that every area they go into are imposing Sharia law, and they're forcing non-Sunnis and non-Muslims to convert to their version of Islam. And when it comes to a conversion, you were talking about teaching them in a classroom. They have certain steps where they teach you Islam, but they give you the watered-down version when you first go in, and as you get hooked in, they then start to unveil more and more. Why is that?
That is a methodology that every cult, C-U-L-T, and maybe in your investigative work in New York, you ran into various cults. Every cult does that, and Islam is a cult. And I'm speaking as a theologian now. You can easily classify it as a cult, because if you were to reveal right off the bat the absurd belief structure, the absurd regulations and requirements, and the evil components of Islam to the potential convert, they would go, are you crazy? I'm out of here. So you've got to say, look, we're loving people. And if you've ever been around Muslims, I've spent quite a bit of time around many Muslims, usually in a confrontation or debating way, and I have become friendly with many of them. Many of them are lovely, lovely, lovely people, particularly those who have been somewhat westernized. because and they don't even really understand their own faith when you start explaining some of this stuff to them. They said, "Oh, you're a hater. Tom Trento, you're a hater." No, your religion requires you to hate Jews and Christians and, if necessary, kill them. No, it doesn't. You show them the stuff. They go, "Oh, you're hating. That's not my Islam." You don't have a choice. This is Islam, you know. So they're seductively brought in as any cult.
Yeah, and right now Indonesia is finding that they've got Sharia police. And recently, this was in the Washington Times, they ticketed 35 women in Indonesia for straddling motorcycles. So in other words, when a woman gets on a motorcycle with her husband or boyfriend, because they're not allowed to ride it alone, they're not allowed to straddle it. And then they turned around and started criticizing women for wearing pants in public. You know, the Sharia has so many restrictions for women that... can you imagine a Paris Hilton under Sharia law?
No, I don't think so. But you know what? I would bet you dollars to donuts that Paris Hilton is pro-Islam, you know, trying to be politically correct, saying, "Oh, you know, if the Muslims want to just build mosques all over, they should, and not all Muslims are terrorists, and not even all terrorists are Muslims." And, you know, but again, this is the work we do to try to stimulate the issue and wake people up. I'm going to pay another toll. Expensive place. For how much? There you go. Thanks.
Yeah. Now, also, Sharia has it where it dictates even how you do your finances. And there's a new industry, which actually, again, this goes back to Indonesia. This was from the Jakarta Post, that they actually have insurance, Sharia-compliant insurance, and then they have regular insurance. They've got Sharia-compliant finance, Sharia-compliant businesses. So this incessant influence of Sharia is starting to hit our very lives every day.
Well, Sharia-compliant finance is a very serious institutional problem in the United States, because there's tons of Sharia money, tons of Islamic money through the oil kingdoms, and Muslims are not allowed, according to the Sharia, to collect or be charged interest, right? So Sharia compliance finance is a shell game that that avoids Muslims from having to collect or pay interest, and it's just simply, you know, shuffling the deck a little bit, but it's enough to justify the legal process of not participating in interest. Well, because there's billions and hundreds of billions of dollars, large Wall Street institutions, Merrill Lynch and these others, have gotten involved in managing Sharia-compliant money, because the profits to them are huge, and the Muslims are loving it because they're sinking their teeth into the financial system in America, and their 50-year plan is being worked out beautifully.
And that 50-year plan is what, bankruptcy for the United States?
No. I got about 5 more minutes, and then I gotta depart you. Sorry.
Okay.
The 50-year plan, which is probably going to be less than that, is to have a substantial influence in key institutions, and an institution is education, particularly universities, in the law system, in medicine, in media, and in politics, have a substantial influence so that the propagation of Sharia becomes more definite. And they understand that it takes sometimes 40, 50 years to move into another poll. Tolls every 5 feet here in Florida.
What are you, on the turnpike?
I know. I grew up in Jersey, and this is like the Garden State Parkway.
No, actually, I have to ask you, where in Jersey?
I grew up in Newark, New Jersey.
Oh, exactly where? Because my mother was from Red Bank.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Newark, in the Italian section, North. But then right before the riots, we moved down the shore to Bricktown and Point Pleasant, that whole area down there, not too far from Red Bank.
I understand the Italians. My mother's maiden name was Della Vecchia. Any more Italian you want to get?
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Yeah, when I call her, I say, sit code.
Yep. Yeah, it was good. I mean, the city was great. And then I loved going down the shore, down to Bricktown, Point Pleasant, Seaside Heights, that whole thing that got hit by Sandy, the whole area.
Yeah. I have some friends on Staten Island.
Let me wind this up because I'm getting into my destination here.
Okay.
And, for your listeners, it's very simple. Islam, not radical Islam, there's no qualifier. Again, a Westerner, an American, doesn't have the right to put an adjective before Islam that really denigrates and dismisses the lofty nature of Islam from a Muslim point of view. Islam is Islam. Now, that's the respect we ought to give to Islam. The sad part is it's a system akin to communism that is destructive to the state and to human nature. Oh, but wait, Tom, there's so many people, 1.3 billion. It doesn't matter if there's 1.3 quadrillion. If the system is destructive to human nature and to political systems, to the state, then that's what it is, folks. You got to face facts. And there are 56 Islamic countries. You tell me, Anne, or any of your listeners, where you would want to, which Muslim country you would like to go live in as a Jew or a Christian. I'm paying another goal, that is. Hi. Okay, thank you. Therefore, if the facts indicate that the system Islam is destructive toward the American way of life and toward Americans, then why do we accommodate it other than... Oh, where am I supposed to go? Hang on.
Folks, this is live radio.
Yeah.
Doesn't get any better than this.
I may have screwed up. But let's see. I'm on the phone and the GPS at the same time. No, so far, I don't know. Oh, I messed up. Yep. Okay. I'll finish up. Then I got to get back on the road here.
Okay.
We could respect Islam as a religion. I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with that, where anybody can believe whatever they want. And if a Muslim wants to practice their faith, you think magic rock, all of that, that's great. That's the Kaaba in Mecca. More power to you, but you don't have the right to take the political part of your system, which is part and parcel of your religion, and say we are going to, over a course of time, through either a cultural jihad or a kinetic jihad, destroy America and rebuild it in the eyes of Muhammad. Then you're going to have to stand against people like Ann and myself and others who have taken an oath and taken a belief in the United States of America as they are. So join the fight. Learn about this stuff. Love the Muslim. Fight the ideology of Islam. And stand up for the truth. That's all I got to say.
Thank you, Tom. And you're welcome back to
come on
anytime. Yeah, and it's Tom Trento. You can find him at trentovision.tv or theunitedwest.org. Tom, thank you so very much, and drive safely.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you, Joe, and see you guys around. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, Tom Trento. Let's see if we can bring Joe back on.
Got enough cash for all those tolls. Jeez.
It's been a fun show, fun interview. So, Joe, I know you've got a lot to say.
Annie, I wish that you had an audience of 300 million people for the last hour.
Oh, man. I hope so, because we were featured.
So many people that need to hear that.
Now, I got a guy listening from Greece, John from saying hello from Greece. Well, welcome, John. We got a worldwide audience. That's God bless our audience. Mike, chime in, because you were awfully silent.
Well, I was taking notes. I mean, clearly, clearly, when it comes to doing very successful businesses are in it for the long haul. If you look at who are the billionaires of today that were not billionaires 50 years ago, they obviously were patient. They knew their business takes a long time. I think a perfect example is Hugh Hefner. He knew Playboy would be popular, and now it's just been longevity. So many other companies the same way. Auto industry, with the Muslims, they're the same way. They know I may never live to see the ultimate goal, but maybe my great-grandkid will. And they are just so patient. You know, they strike strategically. Just when you think they're gone, they reappear. They're very well armed, very well financed. I mean, just this is a perfect example of indoctrination. How he mentioned that cults do basically the same thing. I mean, Osama yeah. bin Laden himself never carried out any suicide bombings, but of course, he knew an awful lot of idiots that would do it for him.
Yeah, it's true, and this is the whole thing, is that they're in the school system, and they're getting kids when they're very young, and they get involved in local government, they get involved in state government, they are inside the Obama White House, they are elected to our Congress and Senate, and they're in our entire system, and it's like a virus. Now, Tom is exactly correct. I don't have a problem with someone being a Muslim. I have a problem when they try to impose their politics and religious beliefs on me and everyone else, and in direct violation of our Constitution. If you want to come here, then come here understanding that our Constitution is supreme law of the land. What you do in your own home and your own synagogue or temple or what is your business, but don't put it down on me.
Well, part of the problem with that is they can't, and they want to change that because they can't do mass beatings inside their own mosque to whoever is a sinner or whatever. You know, they can't beat them to death and get away with it. That's the problem. And I think, for example, in many of these communities where you have people who have been here for 100+ years. And they're of Muslim. They're not practicing Muslims. I mean, they're Westernized. They're just American people. And a lot of them probably don't even know where the nearest mosque is. But I mean, one of the big problems is here. You see, the amount that we have are being successful in their attempt. And they know. Okay, say they fail in Oklahoma City before a judge. Well, you know what? They're going to go to Memphis, Tennessee, or Denver, Colorado, or Green Bay, Wisconsin, and they're going to try the same thing. They know sooner or later, as in playing blackjack, 21 is going to come up.
Yeah, and one of the things is what we have is the FBI, the CIA, the other government agencies, the military, they have people come in and try to teach people about Islam. But it's such a watered-down version that they're not getting the whole truth. That's why Major Hassan was ignored with the Fort Hood shooting. He was out there directly proselytizing and telling people exactly what the beliefs are. The military said, no, 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 we can't say anything about him. We've got to be politically correct. This political correctness has to stop. If it doesn't stop, we will fail as a nation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Annie, this is Joe. Could I put a plug in here?
Sure, go ahead.
Those of your listeners that are interested in what Tom had to say, they can go to our website, SouthCarolinaTeaPartyCoalition.com, and see a trailer of the speakers at our convention, and they can also purchase a set of DVDs, which would have Tom Trento on it, Frank Gaffney, Ambassador Henry Cooper, and former Navy SEAL Ben Smith. And they were just wonderful presentations.
Yeah, you had Brett Bratton and Yaron Brook on those tapes also. They can also find Tom Trento up on teapartycommunity.com, which is a brand new website for conservatives, for Tea Party people, for like-minded people. It's very, very similar to Facebook in the way it's held, so you can communicate with everyone. And when I last looked, they were, oh, Jesus, was it going on 2 million followers on it?
And in
the 1 month that I went up on there, I have almost 1,000 followers on that. So it's going to be competitive to Facebook. It's
you need it.
Yes, we definitely do need it, because we really do need to get this message out, and we got to tell people. We've had Dave Gobetz here talking about the Muslim mafia, and you know, at that point, I was starting to understand how insidious this is with his book. But between CARE, which is part of the Muslim Brotherhood, and CARE is the one that goes into all the various government agencies as well as businesses to teach about their version of what they want us to believe Islam is. And we still cater to them. The second CARE raises its ugly head because you're talking against them, they come back and they slander you. They tell you you don't understand, you're a racist, or they'll hit you with lawsuit after lawsuit. And we've got to stand up to this. We can't let them do this to us.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely amazing. Mike?
Well, one of the things we have to remember is that, I forget what, I think it's Thomas Jefferson who made the quote, might have been Alexander Hamilton, but when we start wavering from the Constitution is when these problems occur. And, I mean, it's just a perfect example of we are simply, as Americans, we are not educated and we are not willing to battle for the Constitution, as is our fighting forces. And that's one of the reasons why you see the military in many, many ways, or you see the federal government in many, many ways, keeping our military occupied overseas and many other places, because the last thing they do is want peace or a civil war at home with the military here, because they know their loyalty is to the Constitution. And we as people need to revere the Constitution, and we need to absolutely be willing to fight for it every second of every minute, of every hour, of every day, of every week, of every month, and every year. And if we're not, that's when we're losing it, and we are losing it. We're losing the battle overall, because, as the old saying is, those who forget history are destined to repeat it.
Right, and I'm glad Florida is coming up with that bill, which recently just passed in the House, I believe it was just yesterday, and it's now going to hopefully come up in the Senate. Only if people go out there and contact their senators in Florida and say, get this bill on the floor and pass it, Senate Bill 58. We passed a similar version, if I remember correctly, Joe, just this last election. I think we had something where it was on the ballot, and I think it's like a constitutional amendment, where we only honor our laws and not foreign laws. Am I getting that right?
Well, I think so, but I'm not sure of the details. I knew that it was up in the legislature. But I believe we passed it, though.
Yeah, I believe we passed it here in South Carolina. And thank you for Senator Tom Davis and others that stood their ground and getting it up there. But
the basis of a lot of this has to be our Tea Party. What we did as far as in 2009, we got to form. We kind of formed, and then we got involved in 2010. And then we got away from it. Whereas we just started in supporting Republicans instead of the Democrats. You know, the Tea Party has to be an independent party. It has to be that huge influence. Whereas you see candidates, they want the black vote or the Hispanic vote. The Tea Party is made up of everybody from all kinds, and they vote. The idea that, say, 80% of the Tea Party people vote, no. They're up to 100% or very – Tea Party people vote. And that we need to be that kind of strong influence where we're not going to waver. It is the Constitution. It is the Declaration, period. And we just can't endorse, this is the lesser of the evil. We can't do that.
No, what we have to do is actively get people out that we feel have our values and get them out there and get them involved. Now, Joe, you can attest to this. At the vetting process, we had all 16 candidates for Tim Scott's seat because we were able to turn around to people that we knew and reach out to them and say, listen, I think you could run for the seat. And we've got to get more and more involved in that manner. You also heard our debate and argument when at the convention, there was one group that was trying to tell us, you have to get behind this person.
Mm-hmm.
And you know me. I do not keep my mouth shut. Was it last year I got quoted in Al's
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah, you had that one speaker that came out and said, we have to vote for, I don't remember, it was Rand Paul, and he says, you must vote. And that's when I stood up, and then we had Mary Lou and Jane Kinney from the Bluffton Tea Party followed right behind me. And says, no one tells us who we will vote for.
Right.
You know, and it's correct. You know, tell us what it is you stand for. Tell us what you plan to do. And let us decide. That's why I think that vetting process was so fantastic, because I shot it out to every one of our members. I put it up on our website. So I said, I'm not telling you who to vote for. I want you to take a look at this, and you make an informed decision. And
they should be telling us why and not who. They should be telling us why we should vote for a certain person.
Yeah,
and not who
exactly. Exactly.
I think more candidates actually need to do that. I if you look at your average debate, let's not even use Democrat or Republican. Let's call them person A and person B. Let's say they're on for a half hour. 15 minutes of that is going to be attacking who slept with who cheated on whose wife, or who was picked up for shoplifting when they were 7, who accidentally maybe used the F word or cursed off camera. And that's 15 minutes of what we're not getting is why we should vote for that person, or why that person would be better than who currently is holding that office. And we should demand that more, but we don't. And in a sense, Muslims are extremely smart. They're letting America crumble from within, because what they're going to do is, because once it crumbles from within, as always, they're going to be there to welcome us with open arms, come into our family. It's a great family. And then they got us, because people are going to be so discombobulated. They're going to be so lost and so whatever it is. And here are the wonderful, lovely Muslims to help us.
We cannot allow to have somebody's sins of the past eliminate them from seeking office if they would be good legislators. Everybody has faults. We're never going to find a perfect candidate. But what we need to do is to look at what that candidate will do in office, rather than the field is so tilted that if a Republican or a conservative uses the word hell, it all comes down on them. And yet a Democrat can get away with anything. And we just have to look at the values, the inherent values that person has with regards to our Constitution. Like everything, all the issues that we face, they all come back to the Constitution. The irresponsible spending, the attacks on our culture, the removal of God from our society. God's name is written all over the monuments of Washington because our founders believed in it. They believed
in a declaration endowed by
absolutely.
Our Creator.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and the family unit is what holds the society together. And in this culture, it's being totally destroyed. And people get rewarded
with entitlements if they destroy their family unit. If you have a husband working at home, you can't collect the benefits. So the husband doesn't live at home. And the children of the same mother have numerous fathers.
Yeah, there was recently a case in Florida where this woman had, I believe she had like seven, the father had like 17 kids. It was also, from different women. 17 kids with different women. There was another woman who was kicked out of her home. She was on welfare and so forth. And I think she had, 15 kids. And she's going on camera. Well, who's going to pay for my babies? Question is why did you have so many when you knew you couldn't afford them? You know, moral values have gone out the window. We have allowed the progressives to devalue our morals. It's okay to be unwed and have a child. No, it's not, because that child needs two parents. It needs a mother and a father. And that's shown. They've done so many psychological studies that say a child will grow up better in life if they have both families caring, both parents caring for them inside the same house. We've got to put our foot down and say no. Let's get back to our Judeo-Christian beliefs and cut this crap out. You want to live like that, then find yourself another country to go and move to. Get out
of my home. It was Lyndon Johnson that started the ball rolling on single parenthood with his great society and giving welfare benefits to those people who didn't have a man living in the house that would be responsible for the family.
Yeah,
that was in 1964.
One of the debates is, I think this is what we need to do more, and this is, I think we look at like when we approach life, we have to do it from a Tea Party standpoint. And when I mean a Tea Party standpoint, I mean this way: we were so fed up, even with George Bush, because he became such a socialist tax spender and an idiot to boot. Those are two bad things to be president of. We went out and we fought for that. We can't be afraid to debate what Tom and what Joe, what you and I are talking about today. And that is for many Muslims who aren't afraid to debate what a horrible country America is and just how bad America is and Sharia. We can't be the type, well, you know what, I don't really want to debate. No. We have to be proud of our political party as well as our God and our faith in the same manner these people are of theirs. They really believe in their cause. Well, you know what? Great. I believe in my cause. And
absolutely.
I'm not backing down from anything, period. And
nope.
You know what? It's when we get the idea, nah, you know, Joe or Annie, don't argue with that idiot. No. Come on. And that's why on BTR I always like, don't disconnect those callers who want to argue or debate an issue. Bring them on. That's what this is about.
Absolutely. We're down to our last minute and a half here. Joe, I want to thank you for joining us. Really appreciated it.
Such a pleasure. Thank you.
Who's Joe pulling for in the big congressional race?
Who else? But
I know. I was a.
It's not going to be Lulu Colbert Bush.
No, well, you got that right.
All right. I want to welcome everyone back on Tuesday when we're going to have Robin Walensky of Glenn Beck TV. She's also written a book, Beautiful Life, about the, what's that woman in Florida that killed her kid? Anyway, she will be with us on Tuesday. So hope you join us, same bat time, same bat station. So until then, have a safe, healthy weekend. Good night and God bless.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up. Trouble
you've
faith.
Been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense, the proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.